Hello and welcome to the Pie and Vinyl podcast. I'm James Sandy and joining me around the shop table are Dan.
Hello.
Hello. Rad.
Hi.
And of course Steve.
Hello.
Hello. And in the next half hour we'll be reflecting on album releases of 2013 and pondering some of our favourites. We'll also be contemplating some of the best shows of the year and flagging things not to miss in the run-up to Christmas. We're going to start in rotation because, you know, we like a way of doing things. We like a process. With Steve, tell us about your first album in 2013 that you put forward as a classic.
Okay, well, it's probably grown on me since I've watched the fantastic TV show called The Returned, or Les Revenants, on Channel 4, which is basically about members of people's family that are dead coming back from the dead and visiting them sort of 10 years after. So it's a band called Mogwai and their official soundtrack, which accompanies this TV show.
And talking about Mogwai, because I've heard of Mogwai.
They're legends. Yeah.
Ledge.
That's
street talk for legendary.
Yeah,
I think it might be.
Yeah, it's rubbish talk for legends.
What's the film? What's the kind of feel of that album? What kind?
Yeah, it's to me, it's a bit Lars von Trier. It's a bit Twin Peaks. It's a bit unsettling. It's, I guess, set in French France's suburbia, and it's got this really unsettling feel. And if you know Mogwai, they're pretty much experts at kind of adding this kind of feel and this soundscape to the visuals. Really impressive visuals. So it is very post-rocky, but yeah, just so addictive. I mean, I think it's the album I've listened to the most this year. So. Purely because of that.
Is it an ambient record? Would you class it as ambient?
Yeah, it's got no words in the songs, apart from one of them, which I think maybe Jay Spaceman from Spiritualized, Spaceman 3, but it's not credited on the actual record. But yeah, it's a fantastic record. I really urge you to at least listen to it and watch the TV show. The last episode's actually this week, and I'm completely hooked. And I don't really watch a lot of TV, of course, I just listen to records.
Of course.
It really is fantastic. So that's definitely one of my albums of the year so far.
Anyone else picked up on that one? Anyone given that a spin?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really into the TV show as well. It's great. I mean, literally, I've been talking about it constantly, like, hyping for it every single set, like Friday and Saturday. Just got a buzz for Sunday coming around so we can watch it. But yeah, it's a great show, and I'm a massive Mogwai fan as well. I really, really love Mogwai. So yeah, I think that was one of the draws for watching it in the first place. I think if I hadn't heard that Mogwai had done the soundtrack for it, I might not have watched it. I might have listened to a record instead, like Steve, or watched a music video. But yeah, so it's, yeah, good soundtrack, great show, great band.
So Rad, we'll come to you for your first choice for 2013.
Okay.
What's the classic that's been humming on your transistor?
Well, hopefully it'll become a classic in time. For me, it's Deer Hunter Monomania. I mean, Deer Hunter as a band, I kind of stumbled across them towards the end of 2012, so I'm a bit late to the table with that one. And I picked up How Come Digest, which is a lovely album, like really, really good indie album, kind of dreamy, I suppose. Monomania is kind of a step away from that. So when I bought it, it was off the back of seeing them at a festival, so I picked up the album, and I was initially disappointed, to be honest with you, but being the way things work, when you commit to buying something on a record, you've got to listen to it again, and again, and again, and again, and slowly but surely, it's just completely stolen me. So that is my favourite album of 2013 so far.
Another slow burn record.
Yeah, and I think that's the best type, personally. I mean, when you buy something and you are moderately disappointed, that sucks. But then when you're turned around by it, it's all the more beautiful. And it's not been on my record shelf as of yet, because it's been on the turntable constantly.
So. And how have you listened to it? Obviously with your ears, but is it something you've listened to out and about, or you've given focus time at home?
A bit of both. I mean, I listen to it a lot at home, as I say. It hasn't left the table. But yeah, it came with a download code, so I actually cycled to work this evening and listened to it on there. So,
well, controversial, yeah. From a cycle safety aspect, yeah, there.
Pretty dangerous.
But he does live on the edge.
He does. Well, apparently he hunts deers, and when he hunts deers, he listens to Deer Hunter. So I've heard.
Is the band name a reference to the film? Is that where it comes from?
Or is it? It could be. But again, maybe because I'm so late to the table with Deer Hunter, I haven't managed to Wikipedia them yet. Find out everything there is to be found. So, But yeah, it's a great record and it's got some great tracks. I mean, Pensacola's an amazing song. It's a brilliant song. Really.
Another one to check out. Dan, we'll come to you next. What's your first choice for 2013?
My first choice for 2013 is Atoms for Peace.
Ah, now this is a Tom York thing.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
tell us a bit more about that.
Well, I didn't realise they'd been going for quite a while. They've actually been creating stuff since 2009, I think it is. But when I first heard about them this year and they released their debut album, I didn't realise that Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers was a part of it. So I was kind of really intrigued to see what this was going to be like.
And he's their bassist.
That's right.
Is that right?
Yeah. And yeah, when I first heard it, just blown away. Absolutely loved it. If you like Radiohead and Tom York, then it's what you would expect. You'll love it. You know, big fan. Fan of it.
They've been in the news, I think, recently for pulling out of Spotify.
That's right, yeah.
And favouring something called, is it called Sound Halo? Which is a kind of live music.
Yeah, they're using that at the moment, so that people that couldn't get tickets to see the Atoms for Peace gigs can watch them online, live, so they can stream it.
So is Atoms for Peace, is it similar to some of the Tom York solo stuff? Is it similar to Eraser,
it's,
I think?
It's still got that similar kind of feel where it's got the guitar loops, the drum loops and samples, but it's also got Flea running around the stage like a madman. So it's very interesting.
Maybe, that's where he gets his surname from. his nickname, perhaps that.
It's got Nigel Goodrich in as well, hasn't it? So obviously Radiohead's usual producer is actually in the band. So I think, I presume he produced the record, I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did everything themselves.
Yeah.
Tom York, I think, once did a duet with PJ Harvey on one of her albums. I think the first album she won the Mercury Prize with. And that was quite an interesting kind of collaboration.
It is, great song.
One of the albums I picked up earlier, which came out in February of this year, was the Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds record, the Push the Sky Away, which for me, I'm a big Nick Cave fan, I was very excited by, because anything new that comes from that stable I instantly pounce on. But what, for Harden fans, was most interesting about it was that Mick Harvey, the guitarist, wasn't on the album. He'd gone off to do other projects. But Barry Adamson, an old Bad Seed, back in the throes, if you like. And for Nick Cave, quite a personal album, quite a kind of, he sort of, I think, jumps between the kind of the songsmiths, you know, sort of very intense personal song to the really loud, you know, coaxing the devil out of Hades kind of sound. A really interesting record. I really liked it, and really sort of for him, I think, contemplating himself as an artist, which is quite a brave thing for him to do. So that was one I picked up on. I like that a lot. That came out in February. And he also did a set at Glastonbury, which I caught on the TV, which was quite mesmerising. He nearly got lost in the crowd, I think, at one point. Did anyone else pick up on the Nick Cave thing? Brad, you're nodding. Go on.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've had a big... massive excitement for that album ever since I think my partner bought it for me as a Valentine's Day present. So, I was actually there for Glastonbury. So, and it was encapsulating.
He was the one that dragged him down and tried to. We won't say what he was.
It was obscene, and I've still got the bruises from the security. It's brutal, but yeah, it's just a phenomenal record. It's brilliant, and you know, you said that you've been a massive Nick Cave fan since day dot, and a bit like Deer Hunter, late to the table with Nick Cave as well. I mean, I'm a big Grinderman fan. I love Grinderman. Yeah. Grinderman is really, really tough, but I've kind of, you know, not really heard a great deal of Nick Cave's back catalogue, so hearing that album has kind of inspired me to delve into it, which is beautiful.
I think that's why it's really come across so well, because he's been working with Grinderman, which is his kind of separate project, a bit more kind of fuzz garage based, you know. Now he's got this kind of real ethereal album that works as a whole piece. And I think the presence and the influence of Warren Ellis is not to be underestimated as well. He's a beautiful, beautiful musician. Obviously, he has his own thing going on with the Dirty Three. But fantastic album. Strongly agree with that choice.
And Mick Harvey, I think, has gone off and done, I think, his fifth or sixth solo record. That's a whole catalogue of things I've not even delved into yet, so maybe that's something I'll make.
It's out the back, James.
Make an offer. I'll get out, delve out the back. You're listening to the Piecast live, recorded live at Pie and Vinyl here in Southsea. We're reviewing and looking at records to date for 2013. Steve, what's the second on your list that you picked up?
Yeah, it's really hard. I must make the point that these are records that I've actually purchased, and as well as kind of connecting with the record straight away, I'm also trying to assess how many times I've actually heard it or how many hours I've spent listening to it. And purely on that basis, I've got to say Kurt Vile with his fantastic album Walking on a Pretty Days. It's got a real kind of slacker vibe to it, which is quite trendy, terrible word, at the moment. But the first song, for an example, lasts for about 9.5 minutes. But you'd never have guessed that. It goes off into all different tangents, and it's a really fantastic record, again, that you can just kind of put on, similar to Nick Cave, and just works as a whole piece. It's a very long record, and I always have a lot of respect for records that are surprisingly long. To me, that's a good sign.
Was that the Neil Young album, the last one, Psychedelic Pill, that came out, and the first track, I think, was 28 minutes or something.
Right, okay, yeah. So, Kurt Vile's obviously stolen a lot longer parts or moments in my life than I realised, but it's a beautiful record. It really is. So, yeah, Kurt Vile.
Rad, let's come back to you. What's the second on your menu of delectation?
The second on my list would be, it's got to be Sigur Rós by Kurt. It's just a beautiful piece of music. It really is.
It's got a scary cover as well, hasn't it?
It has got a kind of an eerie cover. And then, you know, some of the records, I mean, Against Burn, if that's the right, I picked the wrong record to talk about in terms of pronunciation.
Are you Icelandic?
Yeah. Can you believe it? But yeah, I mean, that's got kind of eerie artwork as well. So, but yeah, for me, I mean, I've been an epic Sigur Rós fan for quite some time now, quite a while. And if I'm completely honest, like Valtari, kind of, I was a bit anxious after that record came out. I appreciated its darkness, and it is kind of a bleak record. But yeah, it just kind of it seemed to kind of, a lot of people said it kind of looked like it was spelling the end potentially for Sigur Rós. And I needed Vika to come out. I needed to hear that record. I needed to hear that music. And I think they've kind of, it seems like a response perhaps to the way people were talking after Valtari came out. And
they did lose a member, didn't they?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, they look like, I think they're the synth player or the keyboardist.
Yeah, it was.
So yeah, there's that as well. I mean, that's obviously going to make a major difference to the sound of the band. But
there's a question for me about their language, because I know they are Icelandic, but I've read that the language they sing in, or some of their the lyrics, aren't really of any language. There's a kind of, they've made their own language up.
Yeah, I mean, like there was a,
we could all do that, couldn't we?
Great.
Yeah.
But there was an interview that Johnsy did with an American radio station, and the guy that was interviewing him said the same thing. It was like, you know, what's your music about? You know, people who don't speak it, Icelandic. What's the, you know, the lyrics sound beautiful, are they? And he on the radio, he swore, but he said that it's basically rubbish. It's just kind of made up. There are some Icelandic words, but generally it's just kind of harmonising.
That's surely the point. That's why he does it. I mean, the Brackets album is, you know, all the way through is purposely made up and advertised as made up.
See, initially I thought it fell into the Shane McGowan Manic Street Preachers bracket, where it was just, they were singing something, but the accent and the slur was so strong you couldn't quite work it out. But it's more than that. It's more creative than that.
Like a regional punch drunk sort of Johnsy Icelandic. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a beautiful piece of work. It really is a lovely album. It's heavy hitting, but it's also got that, I think it's got the poppiness attack, but it's also got the kind of seriousness of Brackets, as you said earlier.
It's the album a lot of people have been waiting for, I think. It's the darkest album. I mean, the cover kind of tells it all, really.
Absolutely.
Attack was the big album, I think, for them, wasn't it? And I think once the BBC associated their music with beautiful whales and dolphins,
that's it.
Sales went through the ceiling, didn't they?
That's it. I mean, I noted this down here, actually. Like, I think the track's called Izjaki, I think. And I just said down here, I've written it. BBC intermission scene written all over it.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be like the Biebs will definitely be capitalising in on that.
Again, it's another interesting association, isn't it, between kind of TV and film and music. And it seems that some bands, not perhaps intentionally, but they do ride on the success of particular programmes or particular kind of...
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. I mean, it's a bit of a bad advert, but didn't Cigar Ross really come into the mainstream because they were George Bush's favourite band?
That's an accolade.
I'm glad I never heard that.
Yeah. Maybe, you know.
I hate them now, I'm going to burn all this stuff.
So. Yeah, Jatis, you know, I'm obviously Icelandic, the Fetus album. Sure, that was it. I'll tell you what, it might even be Bill Clinton. Let's hope it was
Bill Clinton. That's a little bit. He's a
if you know, email him, tell us.
It can't be George Bush, can it?
No.
But hey, what would George Bush's favourite album be?
We'll ask
an interesting question.
He's not busy. But let's ask Dan. Let's come back to Dan now. Dan, what's your second album of 2013 so far?
My second choice is Alice in Chains.
Ah, now, is that heavy?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, it is.
Because by the nature of the title, it should be soft, shouldn't it? But
yeah.
Maybe it's a twist. Maybe that I see what they're doing there. So what is that? That's quite. They've been around for quite a time. A long record for them in the sense that, you know, they've done a lot of studio work.
For me personally, it was them back on form because it's their second album with a new singer since Lane Staley died, and the previous album it was good. And it had some good things about it, but this is, for me, is Alice in Chains. It's got the classic Alice in Chains harmonies where Jerry Cantrell's taking more power over the vocals, and yeah, it really did it for me. I thought it was amazing. Just had it on constantly.
Do you think they've consciously kind of honed their sound? Have they made a record that sounds like Alice in Chains? You know, they've kind of analysed who they are. And,
yeah,
and
there are elements of it where you could listen to it and think Lane Staley was still a part of it, you know.
Yeah.
Again, you can still tell that there is somebody else singing, but yeah, I loved it. Just absolutely blew me out of the water. I thought it was unbelievable. Great stuff.
It's not one that has come across my radar, but yeah. Are the vocals massively different from previous? Are they trying to apply a new style? Or?
No, I think they've gone back to the old style for this album. The last record seemed to be more of a new take on it because they had a new vocalist. So they tried something new, but this seems to have that classic Alice in Chains feel. So it made me feel like it was 1992 again. It was, yeah, I
made you feel young again.
Exactly. Excellent. Exactly.
A young man in shorts. What more can you ask for?
I was just going to say it was a beautiful physical release as well.
Yes, it was.
It was a picture disc, wasn't it? Yeah,
it was. I absolutely loved that. That's what I got myself.
And yeah.
It's there. You could just have it on your wall as artwork.
Yeah,
it's
really,
really
pretty.
Nice.
That's what I remember.
You do sell frames, I believe, in the shop for that purpose.
Frames, we do.
That was called a cunning plug there. I managed to get that one in. I suppose the other kind of big comeback record of the year, which I'm a big fan of, is the Suede record, the Blood Sports record that came out earlier this year. And that was very much, I think, an album where they had sat down and thought, right, what is our sound? What is Suede's sound? You know, we know that Brett Anderson went off and did solo things, and, you know, Bernard Butler is long gone and producing and doing other bits and bobs. Richard Oakes, of course, with Art Magic, and played a set last year here in this very shop. They came back with a real belter, I think, of a record, in the sense that you could tell instantly it was a Suede record.
Yeah.
But it was some hits, you know, there were some real kind of jaunty, swaying tracks on there. You know, I was at home waving my gladioli around, wearing my lame. Still pretending to be Morrissey stroke Brett Anderson, but a great album. But that wasn't the second choice for me personally.
Right,
it was up there, but I opted for Ed Harcourt's album. Picked up on that, which is Back Into the Woods, and there were a number of tracks on that which just absolutely amazing. Take you somewhere else, you know, really kind of ethereal kind of sound. I think he was kind of going back to this is me and a piano. You know, this is kind of who I am. I want to get some songs out there, similar in some ways to the Nick Cave record, but a very different vocal range and vocal sort of approach, if you like. Interestingly, I think he cites Nick Cave, Tom Waits, and others as kind of influences. Yeah. But a great record and a very nice vinyl release as well. And I think that also came with a download receipt or something.
Yeah,
I don't understand these newfangled things, but you know, very physical. Very nicely put together record. Looked quite aged. A picture of him on the cover of just playing the piano, doing his thing. So that was
very well actually in this shot. There seems to be a lot of Ed Harcourt fans around here. I'm actually taking notes myself. You know, because I that's one that I want to check out, certainly on your recommendation.
Get that one in while it's fresh. It's still only been out, I think, a couple of months.
Yeah, a bit longer, 3 months perhaps, but yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move very quickly to your third choice. So we've each picked three albums that we're really excited by in 2013. Steve, we're coming back to you.
Okay, my third and final choice is Unknown Mortal Orchestra. It's probably the second record I've purchased this year. Funnily enough, the first record I purchased this year, Solange, it was a really close tie between those two. Maybe January was a good month for me, and I'm looking back nostalgically. But I've always got massive admiration for artists which kind of really wear their influences on their sleeves. So Unknown Mortal Orchestra, it's a very psychedelic sound, but to me it's like nothing I've ever heard before. It's very, very clever. The arrangements in the songs are great. They're very poppy. Some of them are even kind of remind me of Otis Redding mixed with psychedelia.
That sounds like a very curious blend.
Yeah, definitely. It really, really, really works well. And again, I can't stop listening to it, which is always the ultimate acid test. So, it's called Number Two, Unknown Mortal Orchestra, and I strongly recommend it.
Is it a follow-up to Number One?
Yes, Unknown Mortal Orchestra. Yeah, it's a guy, basically, from New Zealand. He was a bit of a space cadet. A really interesting story, worth catching up on online or reading about it online, his story. I won't go into it, it certainly adds to the whole experience. It's a really great record.
Okay, Rad, we'll come back to you. Your third disc that risks, that was a phrase I used the other night.
Yeah,
and I got accused of sounding old fashioned.
Yeah.
But I used it anyway. Go on. Okay. What was the third? What's the third one you've plucked out for us?
Well, I'm going to have to cheat a little bit because you pinched my number two.
Oh.
I was going to talk about Nick Cave a little bit, but...
We could talk about Nick Cave all night.
It's 5 pages you've written down there. So you're not going to use that now.
Oh, right. So I'm just burning it now.
The essay is ruined.
But I'm going to cheat because I'm going to have to go with The Kills, to be honest, and that is a cheat for two reasons.
See the record behind you.
It's very new, yeah. So yep. I literally looked for inspiration and there it was. But yeah, it's also a live album, so there's no new material. The main reason I absolutely love it, it's a great record. The Kills are a brilliant band. I'm basically going to attempt to run away and marry Alison Mosshart. That's going to happen. If I have to kill Jamie Hintz, it's fine. It's alright.
This is all on tape as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair, he's got Kate Moss, so he's not going to be that bothered. So.
There we are. So it's a win-win for Rad. It's a great record. And yeah, off the back of it, it kind of made me think about when I saw him in Reading Festival in 2011, and the record itself does sound as good on acetate as it did when I was watching them in the crowd at Reading, and it's brilliant. And I think I did some reading off the back of it, and it would appear that they're in the studio at the moment, and there's going to be some new stuff coming, and there's also slight whispers about a new Dead Weather as well, so I'm quite excited about that. The Kills, a new record, brilliant.
Is it a live record that covers their back catalogue, or does it just sort of cover the last album?
I think there's six tracks on there in total, and five of which are off the last album, and then four of which are off the last album, the other two are off the album before it.
Any dodgy cover versions on there or
no?
That's often snuck in on a live album, I find.
No, yeah, there's nothing like that on there. It would be awesome if there was, but there's nothing like that on there. It was nice to revisit Blood Pressures was the last album. And it was nice to revisit that. And I haven't heard it live since I was stood in front of them at Reading, so it was good.
I think that's a good enough excuse, don't you?
Well, it's been released this year, and to be honest, a bit more background to it. It's a project that Third Man Records, obviously Jack White's record label, jointly released on Monday with The Kills was The Shins as well, and he has a room called The Blue Room, and they're all, as Rad touched on before, recorded directly to acetate, so they're recorded live, so you really do capture the essence of the live sound. You can hear the humming of the amps. It's an absolute primo sound, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
It's really impressive.
Completely warts and all. I mean, it's brilliant. You can hear it for the crowd, and as soon as you drop the stylus, you just hear it. It's like,
yeah.
And when the track dies out and they're giggling or whatever in between songs, you can hear it again. And yeah, it's just it's nice.
One to grab off the shelf while it's still there.
Yeah, it came out Monday, so we've got a couple left. It sold very well. Excellent. Very well, yeah.
Dan, let's come to you for your third and final. What have you got on your list?
My final choice is a little bit of an obvious one, but it's still great. It's David Bowie.
Ah, The Next Day.
Yeah. The whole surprise release on his birthday just...
It did catch a lot of people off guard, didn't it?
Very much, and it generated a lot of excitement, and I was one of those people who was very excited about it, because I really liked Reality before, and because it had been such a long time, there was just absolutely nothing. As soon as that came out, all over it, loved it.
It had has a really interesting cover as well.
There's a big
debate about the cover, whether it's rubbish or not. And I think not, because I initially looked at it and thought, that's a terrible cover.
Yeah.
Just to explain, the cover is, I think, the 1977 Heroes album.
That's right, yeah.
With a big white square over his face that says The Next Day. And there's a whole thesis, maybe, in how they arrived at that. But there's something, I think, in saying that the first record it kind of nods to was a blank canvas for something in the future. And there's also a reflective element to his record, isn't there? Because he's knocking on mid-60s, I think now.
I think so, yeah.
He's getting there.
Yeah.
He's probably got his bus pass, I would have thought, by now, has he?
Yeah.
So, but a great record. I think one of the things most people are surprised by, not just the release, but the sound. You know, the sound's very fresh, very energetic, very Bowie, you know, very... Yeah.
It was the same producer as, well, he's worked with a lot of times. Is it Tony Visconti?
Yeah.
So he's still got that Bowie sound, you know. It sounds amazing.
He produced the Heroes album as well.
Yeah.
But Bowie's always been about kind of creating this character almost. But I don't know, this is clearly David Bowie, and he's reflecting on all of these characters and his past. So he's looking back retrospectively rather than looking forward, you know, the Starman thing, or this kind of always looking to the future, reinterpreting his art. Really agree with that. Yeah, it's fantastic. And sort of lucky enough to try and sneak into the V&A exhibition recently as well. So it really is his year.
That is a great one. And in terms of sales, it's been absolutely massive. I think, you know, it was number one within a week of it being released or something.
It
shot up there. I mean, people would say he can sell anything, you know, his name on anything would sell, but, you know, there was genuinely, I think, a really good record, you know, but, you know, kind of and a good idea for a record as well, because there's a theme throughout. It's not just Reality to a point, I think, was a collection of songs loosely sort of, you know, loosely related, if you like, but The Next Day, there is definitely more of a sort of, I suppose, nostalgic in some ways artist looking back, you know. Again, it's that self-reflection thing.
There's a lot of songs on there as well, actually. It's about 16, isn't it?
17 on the deluxe edition.
It's a bargain, an absolute bargain. My last choice, my third choice, is a bit of a wild card, but it came from a band called The Lone Bellow. It's an eponymous album, and it came out in January, so it only just gets in, I think. It was very nearly released in December, so it's here, but some really nice tracks on that. Really kind of folky, quite aggressive folk in some ways, if you can imagine that. You can be lulled into an aggression. A couple of songs on there that stand out. One called Two Sides of Lonely. Google that, you'll find the video for it. It's absolutely exceptional. It's the band basically come together in the snow, and they're filmed walking along into a church and then perform the song, and it's quite something else. So have a look at that. There's also another song I'd recommend called Fire Red Horse, which is a good one to look at. They're quite big in the US at the moment. Haven't really, I don't think, touched here, really, but The Lone Bellow, so that's my other recommendation. That's my my third album. Now, very excitingly, earlier on in the week, we had We Are Scientists in Pine Vinyl, in some of the space we're occupying now.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky.
Great lecture.
It was great. I was very lucky to press gang them into the back room where all the records are, and I had a quick chat with Keith and Chris, and here's what they said. I'm very pleased to be joined by Keith and Chris from We Are Scientists. And,
yes, you are.
We are in the back room of Pie and Vinyl, which is very exciting. We're surrounded by lots of vinyl.
Yep, no pies in sight.
No pies yet, but I'm sure some could be arranged. Are you vinyl junkies? Have you got big collections at home?
I have a pretty sizable collection, although I recently went through a breakup
and moved out of my apartment, and all that stuff is still in my old apartment. So actually, I have no vinyl.
So are you going to
get it? I'm definitely going to get it. I'm just waiting for the right time when she's out of town.
It sounds like a grisly situation, which would be a good basis for a song, perhaps.
Yeah. Where my vinyl go?
Vinyl cries. Yeah. Tears so, upon the vinyl.
Lost vinyl.
Yeah.
You sounded great earlier when you were doing your set. Some great songs. You've got an album kind of up and coming, is that right? You've done four studio albums?
This will be our fourth.
Fourth studio album coming up, yeah. And it's finished, but it's not going to be out till beginning of next year.
You're still putting the finishing touches to it?
Not really. It's pretty much done, but now we have to kind of market it so that we make sure that every single person in the world buys it. I think that's the plan.
That's the goal.
Yeah. I'm sure that will come true.
Yeah. So we actually recorded some songs since we recorded the album, and that's what the 7-inch is some newer, even newer songs. And then, we're going to kind of be dribbling stuff out throughout the rest of the year.
So you mentioned the 7-inch, the exciting double A-side 7-inch.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain the thinking of that? Because some younger folk might not know what that means. Triple A, they might know, but double A, they don't know what that means.
Well, you know, traditionally you have an A-side and a B-side, and there's an automatic ranking involved in using that terminology. So we refused to consider either of these songs the lesser, and therefore they both got called A-sides. We could have also called it a double B-side, since even our true B-sides are A-sides for most bands. That would be a little silly.
It would be misleading.
It's getting very complicated. So do you think in an MP3 age, do you think the double A-side still kind of matters?
Very important.
It's an important thing?
Very important.
I mean, you saw this turnout. It was a capacity crowd here at Pine Vinyl.
We were absolutely rammed here.
So you tell me whether or not that matters.
So your new album that's due kind of, I suppose, towards the end of the year, next year, you mentioned. What, is there a focus or is a theme for that? Or how did you come about sort of, how do you approach an album? Is it things you've kind of developed over time? Or have you got a particular muse that hits you?
A combination of both, huh? I mean,
yeah. We haven't really written a rock opera yet.
No.
Certainly not a narrative going.
Is that in the pipeline?
No.
Somebody's pipeline.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's one coming, I'm sure. Some jerk soon will come out with a rock opera shortly.
Yeah. So over the four albums, how do you think your sound has changed? Because you've had a couple of lineup changes and a couple of, I suppose, changes in style to a degree. How do you think the sound has changed? When you look back,
probably most prominently we've kind of left behind the disco rock of our first record, which was very very timely, if I do say so to myself. But it is no longer favorable. So our songs are less classifiable now. I guess they're generally speaking indie rock, but they're kind of just rock songs, I guess, in the mold of We Are Scientists.
Are there things that perhaps are hard to play now live? Are there things from your back catalogue that you've perhaps left on the shelf?
There are definitely a few songs that we don't really play anymore. We've got enough albums under our belts that it's actually belt singular. We share a belt.
Communal belt.
Yeah.
That's an Elvis thing, isn't it, I think? Have one belt?
Yeah, own one, but he didn't share with anyone else, yeah.
Well, that's debatable.
Could have been two Elvises,
you never know.
Oh, man, is that...
Did Elvis really only have one belt?
I think so. I'll check that. I'll look that up on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Huh.
Sounds... I'm dubious.
Yeah. That doesn't sound very Elvis, to be honest.
No.
Well, you never know, do you?
Especially since he probably would have had to buy a bigger belt...
As time...
Midway through that career. Maybe when I say career, I mean his... Physical
each
career.
Each year, really.
Yeah.
Each year, a new notch.
Tell me about some of the gigs that you've done so far. Obviously, you're playing Wedgwood Rooms in Portsmouth tonight. Imminently, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
You did Bristol, I think, yesterday or day before last.
We did.
You played on a boat, which is a first time, I think, wasn't it?
It was our first boat show.
How did the boat show go?
Went great. It turns out we are natural mariners. Neither of us got seasick.
It was nerves, it wasn't seasickness.
Yeah, there was a lot of people
just,
in the crowd.
I was just showing off.
Yeah, it's kind of part of our show, though. I mean, as you probably know, he throws up at the shows on stage.
I didn't realize it was, sort of arranged. I thought it was sort of impromptu.
Well, it's actually triggered by our front of house guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He puts a little reverb on the vocals, maybe a little slap delay at this one part of Impatience.
Mm-hmm. And there's a colored line, I guess.
Then there's a button he hits.
So you're playing dates in London, you're doing Coventry, Glasgow, Manchester, Preston. You're doing all the points on the map, really.
Mm.
Most, I think, if not all of your shows have sold out, completely sold out, which is very exciting.
I think,
great for you guys.
I think only Preston now is refusing to sell out.
They'll buckle eventually, they'll buckle.
I think they'll come around to We Are Scientists. Yeah. We're going to go there 2 days early and just kind of go door-to-door.
Busking.
Yeah, ring the doorbell, offer to play an acoustic song, offer to come in and put a CD on, you know, get people interested.
It's a kind of friendly approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well, then we'll strong-arm them once we got inside the house.
Yeah.
Softly.
Yeah.
I see. So, when you're touring, when you're on your lavish tour bus, I'm guessing, are there certain sort of rules and rituals that you have about things you can and can't do on there?
Our bus driver is a real prick if we mess with the chemistry in the hot tub. Like, he's the only one who is allowed to touch the chlorine levels and stuff in the hot tub. Otherwise, it's pretty loosey-goosey. It's kind of whatever, anything goes. I mean,
you can't hunt. We don't have a license to hunt female deer on the bus,
right,
but we can kill any bucks we like.
Yeah,
as long as you're keeping the speed limit on the right side of the road, you'll be okay.
Yeah, our tour manager gets kind of, I won't say upset, but he gets nervous when people stand on top of the bus unless we're on the freeway, because the turns are gradual. But if we're not on a motorway, like if we're in the city, he gets really nervous.
I think sort of wind resistance is a frightening dynamic, isn't it?
You gotta know what you're doing.
It's not amateur hour up there.
When you're on the bus, what kind of things are you listening to? Are you listening to your own songs, or are you listening to kind of?
We listen to stuff in our green room, dressing room.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that on the bus there are TVs and a big bank of digital movies, and you know, with that sitting there, it's almost impossible to do anything else.
Hard to resist.
Yeah, three movies. Still incredible. Still incredible. We're old enough that's incredible to us.
I wanted to ask you about some of your influences, because you know, I think it's for me, certainly listening to a lot of your music, there are clear David Bowie references in a number of things that you've done. And that leads me to ask about the new David Bowie album. Have you had a chance to put that on and listen to that a little bit? Or The Next Day, it's called.
I have a real problem with not wanting to be disappointed by things and having them color earlier things, so I haven't listened to it at all, because I suspect I won't like it, even though people really seem to like it. Bowie recently has kind of not been doing it for me, and that's my generous assessment of it. So I didn't want to hear that, even though everybody seems to think it's really great.
They do say about David Bowie albums that you've got to give them 5 years, so when they come out, 5 years obviously makes a reference to a song of his.
5 years of clocked listening time.
Buy it, put it in a drawer, 5 years later come back to it, it'll be fresh.
Yeah, he would give me another 5 years, I'd be psyched.
Yeah, but I mean, this, I've listened to it. I think it's, I like it, but there's no way that in 5 years it's going to
become a classic.
Be held alongside the greats.
Okay.
Is there, I mean,
who knows?
I guess one wouldn't know for another 4.5 years, but...
So we are at Pie and Vinyl, and it would be wrong of me not to ask a pie question.
Yes.
Now, I've detected from your accents you are Americans, and I couldn't think of, apart from Don McLean, I couldn't think of many American pies. I could think of pumpkin pie and key lime pie, but are there American pies that...
Apple pie now.
Cherry pie. Are they as good as some of the pies, perhaps, that Britain has to offer?
I mean, pies in the US are really a dessert thing, and in the UK that's
very
much not
pies.
The case. Yeah, I think we have you'll get like a chicken pot pie for some reason.
Right.
Is a very common, you know, UK-esque pie that we have in the US, but that's pretty much the only one. Like, there's no other savory pie in the US.
I like to quiz bands on pies, because it's an important kind of multimedia aspect, I think, these days.
Sure.
You know,
if you can't express yourself via pie, then you're missing a whole section of the audience.
And pies are one of the things you can't really digitize, you know what I mean? Pies are always pies.
It's true.
Talking about vinyl right now. I mean, there's part of me that's like, I guess we should talk about MP4s. Pies, man!
Is there even a digital equivalent?
So, just to wrap up, you are scientists.
Mm-hmm.
It's a clever question here. You are scientists. What is your science? What's your discipline?
Beer digestion. The principles of beer digestion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a book in that, maybe?
There's a lot of naps. There's a lot of naps in it.
There could be a pamphlet.
It's just like one of those non-verbal signs with glyphs showing what you do.
Yeah.
What you do and then what happens at the end.
It's also one of those rare...
It's a scratch and sniff one.
It's one of those rare sciences that requires as much physical training as mental training. And you almost can't point to another one.
Well, listen, guys, genuinely a great set earlier on. You were sounding really, really good. Best of luck for the rest of the tour.
Thank you.
And Keith and Chris from We Are Scientists, thanks very much. Great to meet you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank
Likewise.
You.
Likewise.
The day you move, I'm probably gonna explode. It's true, I'm probably gonna explode. We'll pray for proof, I'm probably making this up. It's true, I'm probably making this up. My body is your body. I won't tell anybody. If you wanna use my body, go for it, yeah. My body is your body, well, I won't tell anybody. If you wanna use my body, go for it, yeah. Go for it. Then nobody's gonna get hurt. Don't move, cause nobody wants to get We'll pray for proof, I'm probably making this up. It's true, I'm probably making this because my body is your body. I won't tell anybody. If you wanna use my body, go for it, yeah. My body is your body, but I won't tell anybody. If you wanna use my body, go for it, yeah. Go for it. Tell anybody. If you wanna use my body, go for it, yeah. My body is your body, I'll not trust anybody. If you wanna use my body, go for it, yeah. Go for it.
Okay, we're going to move excitingly now from acetate to the live performance, the thrill of the sweat and the swagger, as I might call it. And we're just going to have a quick recce, I suppose, in terms of favourite shows from the year. Now, we'll start with Rad, I think, because you've been to the big show, if you like. You went to the big show, Glastonbury.
Yeah, I hit Glastonbury this year. It's a brilliant festival for anyone who's not been. I mean, I think sometimes there's a misconception that it's just full of, field full of hippies and stuff like that, and it's not the case at all.
I mean, there's some of them still.
Yeah, there definitely is. There's definitely is. But I mean, you've got every single type of individual, every spectrum of humanity kind of frequents that festival, and that's one of the great things about it. I mean, I think my highlight from Glasgow was probably Nick Cave. I saw him twice this year. I saw him Optimus Primavera as well,
without his big silly beard as well.
Yeah, no moustache. Yeah, so it was just the Ellis's beard that I was mesmerised by. And to be fair, I think at Glastonbury, he smashed his performance from Optimus Primavera in Portugal at Glastonbury. It was so much better. again, with the different types. I mean, there was literally like a probably mid-50s, maybe getting on for 60s sort of couple sat in some sun loungers behind me. And, yeah, like a long-haired hippie to my right. And then there was me and all of my miscreant friends sort of there watching Nick Head as well. And, yeah, he was phenomenal. And, yeah.
He does draw a very mixed bunch, I think. I saw him a long time ago at Hammersmith Odeon, and the crowd was difficult to describe, because you'd think it would be aging goths. And there are some of those, but there are, you know, country gents and business folk.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's also a product of being a 30-year strong band as well. You know, you can pick up people along the way as well as dropping people off. And on top of that, I reckon, because I'm pretty sure they weren't supporting. I won't believe that for a second, but they were opening for Mumford and Sons. So a lot of people were kind of in there, and that was it. We shall not be moved because we love Mumford.
That's a difficult gig, isn't it? Opening for Mumford and Sons.
Well, yeah, I mean. And there might have been some stragglers from Vampire Weekend as well, who played just before him. Yeah. They were brilliant as well. So yeah, that'd be my number one for the year, I reckon.
Great. Now, Dan, you're going to localise things, things. What's your favourite show so far?
My favourite show was right here in the shop. It was on Record Store Day, and it was Band of Skulls and Bee of the Bang.
Excellent. That's a good mix.
Yeah.
So,
great day.
Just explain what happened here on Record Store Day, because everything went crazy, I think.
It was a very busy day. They were queuing up from, was it 3:45?
Yeah, I think so, around that time.
Yeah, very busy day. I was in the queue myself quite early, but not that early. And yeah, I was lucky enough to get a ticket to come back and see Band of Skulls, and they were amazing. They were, I felt very lucky to see such an intimate acoustic show, which isn't something you're going to get to see all the time, so it's quite a one-off thing. And yeah, it was amazing. And then shortly followed by the Bee of the Bang doing an acoustic performance later on, which was also fantastic. Very, very good.
Sounds like Christmas came early for Dan, which is always good, isn't it? Steve, let's come to you now. What's been your landmark show so far?
Yeah, it's. I mean, in terms of shows, it's got to be Kaya Vinyl Presents Bone Engine. Slightly biased, but it really was a fantastic show. It was our busiest Pine Vinyl Presents. I was really happy with the way it ran, so I guess I'm coming from it at a slightly different angle. But the guys are just immense live. I mean, if anyone's seen Bone Engine, or if anyone was there, then you certainly realise how powerful they are live. They're so nice as well, and it's so nice how they can make that noise and just be so lovely. I'm a big fan of those guys, and just seeing them live again really sort of blew me head off. Really fantastic show all round.
Well, to add to the bias, and this is a podcast for Pine Vinyl, so we're allowed, my favourite show of the year so far was Willie Mason, when Willie Mason played here in the shop to support his album Carry On, which I think came out October, I think, last year. He was amazing. Not only was he a really nice guy, and I was really lucky to get to have a chat with him, but he played a song called Show Me the Way to Go Home, which just took me somewhere else. You know, a real kind of bluesy, almost a kind of Leadbelly song. You know, kind of. On the face of it, you'd think it was quite a simple song, but actually, when you sort of listen to it more and more, quite complicated. So that was great for me, and again, you know, really intimate performance.
Really great install, really, really great. It just works so well, him by himself, and
he described himself as a wonky tonk artist, which I thought was a really good description. In these days, it's very very difficult to kind of put brackets around people, so when they do it for you, it's even better. So
really special.
Okay, we've had a quick review back at 2013 so far. Now, Steve, you've got some ideas for things coming up in the second part of the year that we might want to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, it's been an insanely, in terms of releases, a massive year for us. I mean, being a record shop that's just started out, you know, these kind of years as we dreamt about, to be honest. I mean, we've had so many big releases that really helped us, but yeah, it seems as though it's actually going on to the second part of the year. I mean, already announced, we've got Arcade Fire. They're releasing their new album in October. Again, a huge fan. I expect that to sell quite well as well.
That's one I've inked an asterisk next to.
Oh, nice.
Be careful how you say that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's no new songs released. There's a really impressive visual to accompany their, I think it was a Twitter announcement. So very excited about that. Talking purely big artists releasing, Arctic Monkeys releasing their new album in September. Their new single, which is actually just coming to the shop today, which is available. It's a really great song, actually. So yeah, big things expected of that record.
Check out the video for that song as well, because that song is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's really provocative and yeah, it's good.
It's a lovely song, isn't it? Just built over one repetitive riff, but again, Alex Turner, he really is a great contemporary lyricist. Again, just picking out, we'll all have a go at this, you know. Just we'll pick out our highly anticipated announced releases, and then we'll talk about rumours. There's No Age, and lots expected of Churches. For me, Julia Holter, she really enjoyed her album last year, Ecstasis. Chelsea Wolfe as well, really big fan of Chelsea Wolfe. And coming out in September as well is the return of Superchunk after, I believe, 13 years. So pretty hyped about that record as well.
I'm quite excited Goldfrapp is on the list. Now, I know Goldfrapp recently, I think, played the Royal Albert Hall.
Right.
I read a review of that. Got a very, very positive reaction. Goldfrapp always do something quite different. You know, they've done the folk album, they started kind of doing the electronic album, they've done lots of different things. I wonder if this is the heavy metal album.
Perhaps.
Could it be possibly the heavy metal album? Who knows? So, Dan, what about just casting your eye over the list? Is there anything that you tickles your fancy, as it were?
Yeah, really looking forward to Nine Inch Nails. Mm. See what Trent Reznor's got on offer for
us. He likes the heavy sound, I've detected.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Should be a good one.
Rad, what about you? What's on your shopping list?
I was tempted to go down the same route as Dan, but to be honest with you, I worry about any new Nine Inch Nails releases, because I think the last couple have been a bit unsure of, you know, like I'm more of an old school Nine Inch Nails fan. I mean, live-wise, I'd get excited about any new release of his, because he said some time ago that he was, you know, going to tour him, and there's always that hope that he changed his mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if I can catch him live again, that'd be phenomenal.
So but you prefer the rusty nail rather than the
galvanised
nail?
The polished galvanised.
Fair enough.
I think my excitement kind of mimics Steve's, really. I mean, Arcade Fire, phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, and yeah, I know that whatever they do is going to burn my socks off, so I think, to be honest, I can't think past that release, you know, because that's probably what I'm most excited about. I mean, I love No Age as well, and yeah, that would be great.
Okay. Steve, let's come now to what I call murky gravy, which is where the rumours hide out.
Okay.
So what chunks have we got in the murky gravy this time around? What could be coming out?
These rumours seem to be confirmations almost daily at the moment, which is really exciting. I was going to mention Sebado, but that has actually been announced. So again, another real favourite band of mine, releasing a new album. So that's actually been confirmed. Perhaps more kind of rumour based, Midlake are really expected to release a new album by the end of the year, which would be extremely exciting. We've got Wild Beasts. I personally think it's probably a bit too early for a new release from those guys. Blur have been touring this year. I think a new album is kind of expected. There's some rumours. I think the band are also playing on the fact everyone's kind of waiting for a new announcement.
You've also got the recently knighted Sir PJ Harvey.
Yeah, well,
looking out for her new album.
You can only dream, but you know that kind of stuff probably takes a while. That kind of anger probably takes a little while to bottle up and then release onto a fantastic. I mean, Let England Shake is one of my all-time favourite records.
It's a great album. It was only recorded in a week, I think, or
was it?
Three or 4 days. So you've got to really pent up that aggression and then release it.
To try and top that or even get near it is probably going to. I mean, let's hope so, but probably need to save some good things for next year as well, because you know, they all seem to be coming out this year.
What about you guys? Have you heard anything? You've got your ear to the acetate. Have you heard anything that might leap forward?
I've definitely heard some sort of something on the room. They were referenced the Horrors. I mean, it's about time for them, I reckon. And I mean, they have been touring quite a bit recently as well. So that'd be interesting. I think, especially because for me, the Horrors have jumped dramatically from album to album. When I first heard of the Horrors, it was like they were actually playing on Saturday morning television, and off the first album, and at the time I couldn't really access it, and then Primary Colours come out and I was drawn into them, and I revisited the first album, it was brilliant, and then the more recent album was something again, I think it's kind of a shift away from the direction they're moving to the Primary Colours, so it'd be exciting to see where they take it from there. So.
Dan, what about you? Have you uncovered anything?
I'd like to hear some more from Beck. I know he's released a track recently, I think it was a collaboration, but I'd like to hear a new album from Beck soon, because it's been quite a while since is it Modern Guilt,
mm-hmm,
I think it was. Yeah, a big Beck fan, especially back in the 90s. I'm a little bit stuck in the 90s, but yeah,
I think we all are.
Yes, and definitely Beck.
I've excitingly heard that Rod Stewart isn't going to make another album.
Which,
you know, I know, so cynical. Anyway, we're at the end of our time, so that's the end of this particular podcast. I'd like to say thanks to Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks to Rad. Thanks to Dan as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your input. I've been James Sandy. For more information on the wonderful things at Pie and Vinyl, you can go to pieandvinyl.co.uk. Check it out, and we'll be back again very soon.